Well, good morning, everybody. 10 minutes after, 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. And for the next 2 hours, we're going to be here talking about car repair questions and problems and check engine lights and do I need to use the new Dexos oil on my General Motors car? And what about this and what about that? And what's the number one reason people have car problems is because they ignore symptoms. It's kind of like a doctor. That's just the way it is. 602-508-0960. Get in early and then you get in quick. 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, and many of our listeners are, 888-960-9696. 888-960-9696. I've been doing local radio. I started in 1988 on another radio station, and I came to KKNT in 2011, and I've had Gil and Jeremy as my board ops and my producers and stuff. And to help you with the technology, I get to sit in this room, and I watch this big screen that's cut in half, and it's got the time on it. The exact time right now is 50 seconds after 10:05. And then above it is, I'm recording the show, and the shows, what I do is that at the end of a show, I edit the shows, cut out all the commercials, which reduces the 2 hour show to about an hour and a half, and then I post them on our website, marksalem.com. So if you ever want to go back and listen to any of the shows without the commercials, then boom, boom, you're done. You just go to marksalem.com, click on, you know, recordings or whatever the thing is. I don't go there very often. Somebody else handles that for me. But I'm the one that takes the show and edits out the commercials and then sandwiches everything together and give it to him. And then everybody does their job from that point forward. So 602-508-0960, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Action Auto Repair. Tom's a good friend of mine. He's located at I-17 in Deer Valley, and he's just a no BS shop. I'm just telling you that. He knows the difference between quality workmanship, excellent customer service, and a fast turnaround time, and his technicians are not going to snow him with no matter what color snow. They're not going to tell him something that he knows isn't true. So he's a good guy, and his staff are good. Everybody understands that they all have a common focus, and that's talk to the customer and get as much information as you can, identify the problem, verify you've properly identified the problem, build the estimate, call the customer with an estimate, customer agrees, you order the parts, you get the car in process, and then when you're done, here's the most important part, you go drive the damn thing and make sure that whatever you're supposed to fix is fixed. So the vibration's not there, and it starts with the rrrr instead of going rrrr, like that kind of stuff. And that's the process that we all use, but you can be sure that Action Auto up at I-17 and Deer Valley Road does that kind of thing. Okay, we'll open up right now with who makes parts for your car. I can't tell you how many times a day we hear, I only want GM parts in my Escalade. I only want Ford parts in my Ford. I only want that Honda parts and blah, blah, blah. Folks, it's really important to understand. We spend $1,750 a day buying parts for cars that we work on. But let me just step aside for a second real quick. Everybody's swamped right now. When COVID hit and everybody ended up being home, we just got swamped with people's cars because they didn't need both cars because both mom and dad were home. And we're all swamped. And there's been times my shop's been back 3 weeks. We just can't help it. It's no matter what happens, it's hard to get to the top of the hump. So if you've got a problem with your car, then call around and get in as soon as you can. But many of us are going to flat out tell you we're 5 days behind, we're 10 days behind, or whatever. We've got that many people in front of you. Now, every once in a while, we'll have an opening and we'll go to the earliest person waiting and call them and say, hey, we've got an opening. Somebody didn't show up this morning. Can you get your car down here today? And those are the kinds of things that most of us are doing. But we hear a lot, I only want Ford parts. So I'm going to tell you a real quick story. A friend of mine, Steve Ambrose, is in South Carolina, and he works on cars. And he calls me up and he says, I can't find anybody that has this Ford rack and pinion assembly for a pickup truck. And I said, well, don't you drive a pickup truck? And he goes, yeah, you, beep, beep, beep. He says, it is my truck, and I need a rack and pinion for it. And they're telling me I'm 6 to 8 weeks out. And I said, okay. I've been through this before. Let me tell you what you do. You go to Rock Auto on the internet. Now, Rock Auto is a small trailer in southern Utah. These two guys have access to the most amazing catalogs you've ever seen in your life. And what you're going to do is you're going to go in and punch your VIN number in, and then you're going to say rack and pinion, and it's going to tell you that part number is 123456, and I'm just using that as a stupid example. At that particular point, you can click yes, and then they say, well, here's 11 different racks for your truck. Now, only one of them is in a Ford box, but they all came from the same factory in China. That's all there is to it. Whether you believe that or not, it makes no difference. I defy you to show me manufacturing plant here that does sheet metal for Hondas and Toyotas and Chevys and Fords and Chryslers. It's just not available. Everything, virtually everything, is made somewhere offshore and for your car. That's just the way it is, and it's really been that way for a long time. It's just that nobody wants to admit to it. Well, one gasket company makes 20% of the gaskets they sell, and they buy the other 80% from makers of gaskets. So in reality, there's a guy out there that's one company that is the gasket headquarters for the world. And he pretty much makes or accesses everything. One company in the world makes thermostats for your car. One oil filter maker makes 50% of all automotive oil filters that appear in more than 50 different branded boxes. There's five worldwide companies that make 90% of the spark plugs. And I'm telling you, we can have a spark plug that says Salem spark plug, and it's the same as the Jones spark plug. It doesn't make any difference what the part number is. Six China companies make 90% of all front-wheel drive axles. Six China companies make 90% of all front-wheel drive axles. Eight China companies make 75% of all motor mounts. And a motor mount is two pieces of metal with a big rubber pillow in the middle of it. We just don't want the motor to sit on metal, and it would vibrate the whole car. That would be unacceptable. So the motor mount is literally two, it looks like an Oreo cookie. It's got two dark sides, two metal things, and in the middle is this big rubber pillow, and it's all vulcanized and glued together. And so that's your motor mount. Your motor sits in three mounts, two fronts and one rear. And when the mount collapses and the rubber goes away, then the two pieces of metal touch one another, and now you have a significant vibration that's there in drive or reverse, but not there in neutral. So it's really kind of easy to diagnose those things. 15 companies globally make 80% of all automotive batteries, and the United States and South Korea are the two big dogs. And I'm telling you about some of the United States. 20% of the manufacturers make 80% of the brake pads and shoes in the United States, but they're in 50 different boxes. And here's the best one. There's a friend of mine who tracks parts backwards, and he also goes to China a lot. And he takes a motor mount over there, and he says, hey, can you build this? So he goes over, and he has a motor mount for an Ultima. It's an upper mount for a 2004 Ultima. And he talks to the owner, and he goes, yeah, I'm already making those. He goes, okay, well, how much does it cost you to make them? He goes, $8.25. And so this friend of mine says, well, we'd like to buy 1,000 units because we know it fits more than just that car, but it's okay. And he goes, okay, we'll sell it to you for $8.50. So the China, so we have 25 cents of American money that stays in China, 25 cents of each mount. Now, when that comes over to the United States, it has transportation costs to get to the West Coast. And then once from where at the West Coast, then a truck has to pick it up and start to distribute it to what we call warehouse directs. So there's these huge warehouses strategically located throughout the United States that have auto parts in them. All of us end up, our parts come through that. Then it goes to the jobber who sells the part to the installer, and the installer sells it to you. That's how it goes. I don't care if you're Parts Authority, O'Reilly's, Napa AutoZone, CarQuest, whatever you are, this is the process. So I'm going to buy that same motor mount that somebody bought for $8.50. I'm going to buy that somewhere between $45 and $50, and I'm going to sell it to you for $78. The person that made the most amount of money on that motor mount is the guy who installed it. And you know why? Because he has to warranty it. So nobody else has any responsibility on that mount until it gets to the installer, which is guys like me, and our customers. So I make the most amount of money on that, and the, all that money from the very beginning of $8.25 stays in China of each amount, and all the rest of that money is to get it here, get it to me, and get it on your car. That's the way it is. I don't care. I'll argue with you all day long. I'm talking to the people that make this ladder happen. And so they tease me. They go, it cost me $45 to $50. I'm telling you, this amount cost me $40 to $50. And I sell it to you for $78. In our industry, it's not uncommon for, depending on how deep you buy, you can almost double your price. So if I bought this for $45, if I wanted to double my cost, I'd sell it to you for $90. Well, I sell it for $78. I could sell it to you for $90, but I'm happy with the margin that I'm at. And greedy people usually get slaughtered. and shops that are greedy usually don't last very long. And I've been working on cars since 1972, and I owned my first shop since 1979. So this ain't, I wasn't born yesterday, and I have to deal with this all the time. So from a global point of view, you can do all you want. But anyway, Steve calls and he's got this rack. And I said, go to Rock Auto and get all the part numbers and you'll find one in your neighborhood. He calls back and he goes, you're exactly right. He says, but here's what happened. I found it in Federal Mogul. I found it in this name and that name. I found all these and they're available. I said, okay, what's the problem? He says, well, the Ford one. He says, so I found the part number and I called my local Ford dealer and I said, hey, do you have this in inventory? And he goes, yeah. And Steve says, just yesterday I called in and I was told no. And he goes, well, did you have the part number yesterday or did you go by application? And he goes, no, I went by VIN number on my truck. And he goes, well, that could have been the problem because there's four racks for that. And he says, and we may not have all those racks. So anyway, he goes, but do you have it now? And he goes, yeah. And he goes, well, can I have one? And he goes, yeah, you can have one. So you can see that you can really bypass a whole lot of stuff if you just get the original part number. Or get a part number from maybe three different. And when you go to three vendors, you'll need three part numbers because each one of them has their own part number. But you can call around and you can get on the internet. So if you're going to need a part and all this idea about waiting and having abandoned cars all over our shop, it's not happening. It's not happening in my shop. We have 20 bays. It's not happening. We do have to wait for cars, but our parts department is capable of buying that in a different box from a different vendor. That's it. So it'll be the same part. It's just, it's a different way to skin the cat. And it's just like tires. We have tires that are 235, 75, 16s, and 15s, but there's 100 different brands. So when you look for a tire, you're looking for the size of the tire, and you can pick your brand. It's the same way with the parts on your car. The key number, though, is the VIN number. The VIN number. 602-508-0960 if you want to talk cars. 602-508-0960, and we'll be right back. In the whole wide world is Automatic Transmission Exchange in Phoenix. He's been around since 1968. Phil has been around transmissions since Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble first got their cars. And if you don't believe me, you just go there and look at it. The fact of the matter is there's lots of transmission shops in town, but you rarely find, if any, find guys that got their start at the very beginning in the 50s and 60s of automatic transmissions. So if you've got any kind of a problem, whether it's a leak and a shift problem or you've got some transmission codes or whatever you've got, then give them a call and ask them if you can stop by. They're located at 40th Street in Washington in Phoenix. And if necessary, they'll take a ride with you. But Phil wants me to remind you that you have to be able to duplicate the problem. He can't let you take one of his technicians for a ride for an hour in an effort to try to make it happen. So you got to kind of how to learn how to make it happen. A good example. The other day, somebody came in and said that the transmission was you know, clipping and slipping and stuff like that. They took a ride, and the air conditioning was low on Freon, so the compressor was coming on and then off. And when it would come on, it would slow the car just a little bit. And then when it would turn off the compressor, it would then let the car speed up a little bit. And it had nothing to do with the transmission. But those are the kind of seasoned guys that they've got, Automatic Transmission Exchange. Bill? Thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yes, I have a 2008 P71, and it was an admin car, so it wasn't the street police car, so it wasn't beat up or anything like that. And right now I'm driving around. It was an intermittent problem, which I hate, everybody hates, but now it's consistent. And all my lights light up on the dash. All the gauges are in off except for the fuel gauge. You know, even the tire indicator came on. I checked all the pressures are all exactly 35, which is on the door. And I know I'm going to have to start digging into some plastic here, but it looks like it's a bad ground. Have you ever come across it?
This isn't a hard one to do if you've done them before. Before you start ripping out.
No, I've never done one of these.
This is the first quarter. I'm agreeing with you. I'm telling you, is something that some gray-haired guy's gonna kind of know. When you lose all the power, you always get the lights. And so the question is where do you lose all the power? And most of the bad connections occur on your Ford at the starter solenoid. And so most of us are gonna go there first and hook a voltmeter and probably put it on the center console with some long leads and just go drive it. And we're just gonna move our pigtails around until we find we got 12, 13, 14 volts here, and then all of a sudden, boom, we got nothing. And then we go backwards, and go ahead.
And it runs perfect. There's nothing wrong with it running. So that's why I was expecting a ground. Absolutely, and it's just the indicators is all it is. And I heard something about when they use these police cars, they bring in their own equipment, and then when they give them back to the public or sell them to the public, or you get it, they've gone through a lot of it. They just kind of do it.
Okay. Well, you can Google all you want, and you can talk to Mr. Google 1 all the way to Mr. Google 2,700,565. Then you ask him send me your W-2 form and let me see where you work, and it turns out that he drives a UPS truck or something like that. I can't answer all of that kind of stuff, and I don't agree that you've lost the ground. That's not what we normally have with this. You could lose the ground, but if you lost the ground and it darkened your whole dashboard, it shouldn't say anything, and then at that point you have no ground in your fuel supply, which means the fuel pump's not going to run, which means the car's going to die. So I don't know what to tell you, but I can tell you there's a lot of guys out there that could find this with no problem. It's just really a matter of looking at the trouble areas, and if you listen good, I said I'd go to the starter solenoid first. I would look at all the fuse links that are attached to the two horizontal studs on both sides, batteries on one side and then starters on the other. I'd go there and start looking really good. I'd also look at the ignition switch, because the ignition switch can be bad on Fords. And the easy way to do that is kind of wiggle the switch when this is happening. Don't go to the start position, don't go to the off position, and then drop the steering wheel down and beat on the top of the steering wheel with your fist. That's $20 worth of Mr. Google for you, okay?
There you go. Sounds good.
Okay, good luck to you. Harold,
thank you very much.
I'm sorry, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off. Okay.
No, that's good. Thank you very much.
You betcha. Harold, how are you? What can I do for you?
Hi, Mark. First, before I ask you the question, I'd like to make a recommendation for a subject for a future show.
Okay.
Virtually every night on TV, we see some place in the country where literally hundreds of vehicles are being flooded. And I'm wondering, are we about to see a surge of flooded vehicles come onto our used car market? And if so, maybe it would help your listeners if you would review again the things you should do when you examine a car to look for future recent flood damage, and also what kind of a paper trail you can look at. For example, if the car was recently titled in Eastern Kentucky, you really might think twice about wanting to buy that car. But anyway, that was just a thought I had for you.
No, it's okay. Well, let me comment. Hold your thought. People can go in with a VIN number and find out the history of the VIN number. So, yes, you can pull the VIN number off of a car on a lot, and you can go in and Google that VIN number and go to a variety of websites, and you can track that car backwards. So, yes, that's one of the things we do. It doesn't take a seasoned technician more than 20 minutes to determine whether this vehicle's been in the flood. That's all there is to it. You have to know where to look. You have to know what to look for. And there's just a whole lot there. There's so many different places you can look. A lot of the guys swear that you just open up the trunk, pull the mat off the truck, and look for mud inside the trunk. Because the trunk has a swimming pool in it. There's a big well in there for your luggage and stuff like that. And so if you're going to be in a flood car, then there's going to be a lot of, as the water moves through the car, a lot of the dirt's going to drop down in there. So you just pull the mat and you just look at it. It's not that hard, but I agree with you. If you're going to buy a used car, you should always try to get the history. And if you're going to buy it from somebody who's reputable, they're going to give you the Carfax from the car. they're going to show you it's been in Arizona its whole life. Or they're going to say this is a flood car and we've already gone through this. So, yes, that's something we're going to see because of the flooding on the East Coast.
Okay, can I ask you a question now?
Certainly.
Okay, we're cutting out, so let me see if I can get my question in. A friend of mine recently bought a brand new Volvo hybrid. Beautiful car, but every time I've been in this car, the engine has been running. And he tells me that he only gets 25 miles on electric. And this strikes me as being awfully low for a hybrid. Have you run into anything like this?
2 minutes. Well, the answer to your question is how long you get your hybrid to run on electricity has everything to do with both hands and both feet. It has everything to do. I can take a hybrid. I'm quite sure me and Tom Blackwell and a couple of other my friends that I like their shops and stuff, we could probably take a hybrid and run it out of fuel in about 10 minutes. You know, you can just do that if you're not smart enough to understand what a hybrid does. And it's that's a good reason why somebody said the other day in a circle of guys, we were drinking beer at a ranch, somebody said, when do you know, have anybody racing Teslas? And everybody started laughing, and this one guy goes, yes, but I'm going to tell you when. He says, it's on a big uphill stretch when they're still 50 miles away from the next big town. Because he says they're not going to be romping and tromping the Tesla when they look down at the gauge and goes, the nearest town's 50 miles, and you only have 38 miles worth of fuel left. And those are the kinds of things. Yes, the answer is you can be stupid with a hybrid. You can be stupid with virtually any car and run it out of fuel, whether it's gas or propane or anything else or electricity. So the answer is yes, that happens a lot. People learn from their mistakes, and trying to get a Tesla towed is pretty difficult, and those people will learn real quick. So at the bottom line is your message is well taken, but it probably has to do with more with your friend and his newness to the hybrid family. I'm sure he'll grow into somebody who's be able to, you know, pump out 100, 150, 200 miles on a charge. It's just a matter of practice, and it's like driving a video game with cars. Anyway, 602-508-0960 is the phone number. All five lines are open, 602-508-0960. If you're outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, 888-960, which is our station, 960, the Patriot, 9696, 888-960-9696. After the hour of 10 o'clock, we have one line that's taken. Greg, I'm going to get to him in just a minute, and that means we have four open. So if you have a car question or if you have an argument at your house and you want somebody to chime in on one side or the other, you don't have to tell me which one you believe in or which one your wife believes on. Just give me the issue, and I'll vote, and then you guys can decide what you want to do. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. 960. And there's four lines available, and Gil answers the phone. He's a really nice guy. He's going to ask you what your name is, and then he's going to put you in queue, and then he says the next caller you've got is Greg, and that's who we're going to go to now. Greg, good morning. How can I help you?
A truck that seems to have a parasitic draw on the battery. I've put in my cell phone in the glove box and the console, trying to see if lights are staying on, and they don't seem to be staying on inordinately long. Took it to a shop. The guy kept it there for 3 days, said that he didn't see any appreciable voltage loss from the thing. I take the vehicle back. It sits for 10 days because it's kind of a gas guzzler, so I'm not driving it that much. And I go out, and the battery's fried. You know, I have to go get a new battery. Looking for suggestions.
Well, this is on a 1 to 10 scale. This is like a 2 for a shop that's been around a while. We have inductive amp probes, and so we know exactly where to go to get all the different legs that feed everything in your car. We know which ones are supposed to be dead, which ones are supposed to be alive when the key's in your pocket. So we have these little meters we have with these big jaws on them, and we just circle a whole big harness, and we're looking for a draw, and it'll tell us what kind of amps it's got. So, but in your particular case, what I would have done was instead of you telling him you got a shorter draw and you want him to find it, I wish you would have just said, this thing after 10 days sits and and there's nothing there, it won't even start. It click, click, clicks. Okay, well, the click, click, click is low voltage. That means we're below 10 volts. So the battery itself should be at 13 when it's parked, because the alternator is going to be between 13 and 14. So when you park it, you can check your voltmeter. Then the next morning, check your voltmeter. And then if you want, take the negative cable off and just check the battery every morning for 10 mornings. If the battery disintegrates from 12, 13 volts down to 9.5 and or below 9.5, the battery's bad. It's shorted. Internally, it's shorted. And over long periods of time, it eats itself from the inside out. That's as easy as it gets. And all the parasitic stuff and all the diodes and the alternators and all the different parameters that keep the ECM alive and keep the memory going and all that kind of stuff, those things rarely happen. It's almost always a bad connection someplace or a bad battery or a bad alternator. Almost always. In your case, I think the real key of your story was 10 days later it's dead. So if you would have driven it every day, you wouldn't have experienced anything because the alternator is refilling the battery. But here's just get a voltmeter. Buy one cheap one and you're on DC voltage. Take one of the battery cables off. I don't care which one. And then just let it sit there. Take a piece of paper out there, put it on a clipboard, put it underneath the hood, and every morning walk out there, touch the battery, and write down the voltage. And any kind of, and you've got the battery disconnected from the truck, so there's no reason for the battery to be losing voltage. So if you start off at 13.5, then it should be 13.5, 13.4, 10 days later. If it's not, then that's the issue.
Okay.
So, and how, and let me ask you a question.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Well, hold on a minute. How much did,
I'm not going.
Okay. Don't tell me the name of the shop, but I'm just interested. What did you pay for the electrical systems analysis on the car?
$70.
Okay. Okay. I want to tell you that's right in the middle of the ballpark, 50 to 100. And if he did everything right, he would have tested the alternator at idle and the alternator full fielded. He would have tested for shorts and draws. He would have checked the starter draw, and then he would have used a carbon pile to test the battery's ability to recover after the starter yanks a bunch of electricity out of it. I want to tell you that $70, we usually find the problem. Because during that process, you're going to find the problem. But I'm thinking the question would be to him, if in fact my guess is right and you have a battery problem, you put a new battery in, problem goes away, then at that particular point, you might, in a nice way, go back and say, you know, during that period of time, did you run a carbon pile test? Did you test the battery's ability to handle a load with some artificial device called a carbon pile? And what we do is the battery's supposed. Go ahead.
I'm relatively sure that he didn't do any of that. He basically just would check the voltage on the thing, you know, over the 3 days that he had it.
$70.
Anything about checking? Yeah.
Okay. Well, let me tell you what many of us do for $70. The first thing we're going to do is take the cables off. Oh, first thing we're going to do is take two leads from our digital voltometer, and we're going to hit the cable. And then we're going to hit behind the plug to see if there's any loss of voltage. So if on the outside of it have 12 volts and on the inside of it we have 9.6, then the cable's dirty. So we're going to clean that up. After we check the cables to make sure that they're firmly fastened to the battery terminals, then we're going to take a what we call, you know, key in your pocket voltage off the battery. And then when we start the car, we're going to bring it up and it better go up about a volt and a half. That means the alternator's alive. That means the regulator told it to do that. So at that particular point, we're going to start loading the hell out of the battery. We're going to turn on the air conditioning and the headlights and stereo system, and we're going to plug in phones. We're going to do everything we can to just maximize the electrical consumption inside the car. And we're going to watch the voltage, and we don't want to see it drop below about 13. Usually that's 13 to 15. Some imports are even higher than that. So then after we do all of that kind of stuff, then we're going to shut it off. We're going to take our inductive amp probe, and we're going to go all the way around both battery cables on the negative or both battery cables on the positive, and it's going to say 0.1. It's got 1/10 of an amp draw. That's just to keep alive memory for your clock in your car. So then you're going to open the door, and it's going to go, oh, man, all of a sudden it's going to go to 12 amps. Well, I just turned on the dome lights. Okay, it can see that. So I'm going to shut the door again, and it's going to go to 0.1. Bingo, we're okay. That's how it works. $70? Anyway, I'm perhaps I'm wrong, or perhaps you're not properly reflecting what he did, but I'm thinking for $70, he should have found it if he would have done what normally is industry standards, I'm thinking. Anyway, good luck to you, Greg. Thank you very much. That's a great question. Thank you, and good luck to you. It's 10:41. We'll be back right after this. Okay. I'm not working every day anymore, so I did call my daughter, and our shop charges $45 for a complete electrical systems analysis. The battery, the starter, the alternator, shorts and draws, anything that's left on, any parasitic draw, all that kind of stuff. Now, it doesn't tell you where it is. It just tells you it exists. So the $45 is like to get you to the next step, which is figure out why this voltage is substandard or why we have a 7-amp draw on a circuit that we should have a zero on. In those cases, when you're doing that kind of stuff, you typically have two techs work on it because it's quicker with two than one. One guy's looking at the meter underneath the hood, and the other guy starts popping fuses. And when he hits the fuse number 13, he pulls it, the problem goes away. Then what have you got on that fuse right there? Oh, well, the trunk light's on that fuse. You open up the trunk, one of the technicians gets inside, you shut the trunk, and he goes, yep, the light's on. And then, so you're going to pay $45 for the checkout, and you're going to spend, I don't know, if our labor rate's $150, then you're going to spend half of that for half an hour. Something like that. I'm not quoting prices on the radio because I don't ever do that, but I'm just giving you a comparison to Greg's $70. Let's go to Chad. Chad, good morning. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
Hey, I've got a 98 Ford Ranger pickup, and we had a problem with the shifter. It was really floppy and sloppy, and a friend of mine, we realized there was a broken piece on the cable adjuster under the dash.
Okay.
And we got that part and we replaced it, and that helped quite a bit. But now every once in a while it won't go into park.
Okay.
You gotta, it'll go into drive, it drops down into drive, and it lines up pretty much normal with the letters on the adjuster.
Okay.
But it won't go back into drive. You got any suggestions?
Well, let me ask you
back into park.
Okay. Let me ask you a couple questions. You're talking about the Prindle, which is PRNDL. That's the pointer on your steering column. We call it the Prindle. Okay, so when you go and you go into park and you go all the way down to low, does the shifter position match the indent on the Prindle on the little message board?
Yes, pretty much.
Okay.
It wasn't before, and that was a piece that was broken that we replaced. There was a little plastic piece that the cable under the dash went into and held it into place.
Okay. So so what we have is the shifter is actually rotating a device at the bottom of the column where there's a cable hooked up, and then the cable goes to the transmission, yes?
Yes.
Okay. But somewhere along that line, one person has to be following and listening to the other person that's sitting in the driver's seat as he moves the shifter up and down. You're going to find some slop somewhere. You have to look. One person is moving the shifter, but the other is listening and also watching what's going on. So he says, I'm in park, and I'm going to start pulling it slowly down into reverse. I'm not there yet. I'm halfway between park and reverse, and all of a sudden, I'm in reverse. And the guy down below says, nothing moved down here. And then you just find out where the problem's at. So in your particular case, there's a variety of things. None of them are serious, but there's bushings in the steering column. And it keeps that park lever running smoothly. And if we lose bushings, then it starts wobbling, and you get all kinds of weird readings, and the car won't start in park, but it'll start in reverse. And that's kind of a key that we've got slop. But somewhere between the maker of the signal and the end of the cable is where your problem is going to lie. But just do what I said. I would suggest one guy's moving the shifter, and the other guy watches from the transmission all the way underneath the car, all the way coming through the firewall, and then all the way underneath the dash. You'll find your problem in there. Okay?
So you can actually look under the car at the transmission and see the cable attached to the top of the transmission or the side or whatever it
the
is
side,
from underneath?
Yeah, the driver's side. That's where the shift lever comes out. And so you'll be able to see that. So if you crawl underneath it with a flashlight and you're on the driver's side of the tail end or the middle of the transmission, you'll be able to see all that happening.
Okay.
Okay.
You think this is something that if I can't figure it out, that Kurt guys can figure it out?
Well, why do you serve me up a softball like that? If you can't get it fixed, you take it to Kurtz and you say, you know, I got a bet with Mark Salem that you guys are going to have to call him and ask him how to fix this car.
Ask him for help,
and I don't want to pay that extra fee. So if you can't fix it yourself, then I'll drive it to Salem's, okay? And that'll do two things. It'll make them laugh, and they'll know damn sure that you and I spoke. And if you live up close to them, they're the best shop up there at I-17 and Bell, okay?
Yeah, I live over in Arrowhead. I've been over to see him before, so.
Okay.
Okay, well, we'll try that. So you think just kind of basically it's could be process of elimination is basically what you're saying.
Yeah, but you just have to watch both ends. Really and truly, there's guys that will lift it up about 2 feet, and they'll put their hand on the shifter, and then they'll look at somebody sitting in the driver's seat, and they're watching the shifter come from park, the indent on park, to reverse, to neutral, and their hand is on the actuator, the shift selector on the transmission, and they're going, well, you're already in neutral, and we haven't moved down here at all. You see what I'm saying? This isn't hard.
Right,
on a 1
right.
to 10 scale, this is a 2 or a 3. So those guys will figure it out.
That's up my alley.
Okay. All right. Good luck to you. Thank you very much. Kurtz is a good guy. If you're up there at I-17 in Bell, he's a good guy. But there's other guys in town. Automotive Dynamics is over in Sun City. He's on the north side of Grand, west of 99th Avenue. Chuck's been around ever since I've been in cars. Chuck has been in cars. Chuck knows the difference between right and wrong. He knows when a technician's lying to him. He knows when a customer's lying to him, just like most of the rest of us do as well. But if you're in the Sun City area, lots of folks will ask me, who do you recommend in Sun City? And I just tell them Automotive Dynamics, been around since 1982 under Chuck's supervision. And Chuck's a good guy, and like I said, he knows right from wrong. We have another caller. Who might that be?
Say good morning to Cap.
Cap, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Mark. I have a lot of confusion about antifreeze these days. There's so many different colors and so many different Asian and European. Could you explain that so that I get a better feel for it?
There's a lot of us that have like maybe 2 or 3 coolants in our inventory, and the rest of them, we have a universal coolant that is golden. And the universal coolant made by a manufacturer like DuPont that you would recognize their name is just exactly that. It's a universal coolant. And there's a lot of us that have gone to just a universal coolant because we don't want to have a blue and a pink and a red and a yellow and an orange. We don't want to have those things. And when you go into the auto parts store.
It was green in the car, and then all of a sudden I'm starting to put antifreeze in, and it's yellow. I'm like, oh my god, am I doing something wrong?
No. You could use either one of those. You can use. I think the yellow is a Chrysler. I think it is, but I can't be 100% sure. I know blue is Ford or was Ford, but as long as you use the same coolant, you're okay. But it's a good idea to at least there is some slight differences with respect to corrosion inhibitors and different things and boiling points and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of good to either use the color you're supposed to, but if you're in the middle of I-10 on a Sunday morning and the only thing the guy's got at the auto parts is green, then put it in and drive it. It's no big deal. Your Mercedes, your Volvo, your hot rod car is going to be just fine with green. Here's the deal. Coolant allows the water under pressure now. Allows the water not to boil till 240 or 250 or 260. Water boils at 212 at sea level. When we add a 50-50 mix of coolant, we oftentimes move that boiling point, where boiling point we turn a liquid to a vapor. We move that up to 240, 250, 260. Here's the deal. At 260, your motor's toast anyway, so it doesn't really make any difference that the coolant's okay. The motor's toast. So in your particular case, you can, if you really want, go down to Pep Boys or something like that and just look at their coolants and buy a universal coolant and put it in and buy 2 gallons, buy an extra. That's it.
Yeah.
Okay?
One last question.
Sure.
About the engine. They recommend that you should use distilled water when the concentrate.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
I don't. I use the same water that's in the toilet at the men's restroom. We don't have distilled water. And in reality, distilled water is a little bit corrosive in and of itself because it's so pure. And so, no, the answer is my shop uses regular water that comes out of the hose. We're not going to go into that distilled thing. It creates this perception that the coolant is so perfect and it's so snooty and it's so North Scottsdale that we have to, it won't like you and it won't do its job unless you give it distilled water, or even better yet, if you want, give it Perrier, whatever.
you're classical. I got to tell you, you're really classical.
I've had a lot of practice being stupid.
Well, I appreciate listening to you every Saturday, and it's like you're my go-to guy when I need help.
Well, thank you for that. That's an honor for me. Thank you very much. Okay, you know, right now I'm going to do a little real estate stuff for you, but as you can imagine, real estate has gone crazy. Well, I'm up in Payson, and I just want to remind you that we're 10 to 15 degrees cooler in any way, shape, or form. Like yesterday was 61 on the low side when I got up to feed the horses in Machoni's, and it was 91, and that's cooler than you guys were yesterday. Up here in Payson, there's lots of houses that were really inflated values, according to Mark Salem, and I'm not a realtor. But they're starting to drop pretty rapidly. So if you're looking in the Payson area, and I love Payson, I'm up here about 5 days a week and down in the valley for 2 days a week. But it has pretty much everything I want. And every once in a while, I got to go to the valley anyway so I can pick up whatever I need. But there's a lady named Lori Coleman that Mark and Renee have been dealing with since the 80s. She's very smart, very proper, very professional. And each and every time we've ever done a transaction, whether we're buying and selling with Lori, she hit a home run. If you just let her have the steering wheel, and she'll talk to you about the placement of the steering wheel. So I'm doing an ad for her she doesn't even know I'm doing. Her name is Lori Coleman. She works for Coldwell Banker, and she's handled the Salem family for 20 years, and she's a really good person. So if you're up here, or if you're going to come up here and you're going to look in Pine, Strawberry, anything up to 260 all the way through Forest Lakes up into Heber, any of those areas at all, she'll cover with you. And when you meet her and talk to her and spend 20 minutes with her, then you'll understand why I really like her. She's honest. She's dependable. But even more important, she'll say something like this. Well, she said something like this to me. You need to stick to cars and leave the real estate stuff to me. I thought that was great. And it's a nice way to say, shut the hell up, Mark, because you don't know what you're talking about. So anyway, her name is Lori Coleman, and she's a good one for real estate if you're going to be looking around up here. And like I said, there's some of those two big golf course places here in town. We're seeing big drops on the amount they were asking. We're seeing them drop down substantially now. So if you're looking and you're sitting on a pile of money because you sold your house, then that might be a good idea. Larry Harker's Auto is up at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Bob and Ellen own Larry Harker's Auto, and I'm really proud to tell you about them because Larry Harker's been open since 1967. There's very few shops in this town that have been open under the same name that long, and certainly I don't own one of those shops that goes back to that 1967. At the end of the day, though, Bob and Ellen and their staff can fix cars. He's one of those shops that if nobody else can find it, if nobody else can fix it, then you need to go there. I tell the BMW story time and time again where somebody had, when they turned on the air conditioning, the fan would blow misty water out at the passenger. And at that particular point, the estimate was $1,500. The car was taken over to Harker's, and Bob and Ellen took care of it. And Bob said, behind the glove box, there's an evaporator case. I already know that, but I'm telling you that. And the evaporator case has a drain. That's where it drains that cold water onto the ground where the drain was plugged up. So, Bob, this is true. He took a weed eater, or not a weed eater, but a blower.
1 minute.
And he blew through the vent, and he stuck a piece of coat hanger up through the drain. And all of a sudden, this big comes out, and a hell of a lot of water comes out. And he's going, well, should I charge him $1,500 to go in there and replace everything? Everything from the airbag to the windshield on both sides of the firewall was the $1,500 estimate. And I think he fixed it for $135 or something like that, because he had to fix all the water and the trash on the passenger side for World War II. We learned to put stuff there now, so we're a little smarter. But anyway, and he does oil changes and everything else. So if you want a good shop and you're near 38th Avenue and Indian School, then it's Larry Harker's. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. When we come back, I'm going to go straight to the callers, and if you want to be one of them, like I say, you have a 1 in 5 chance of getting. And Gil's the one that answers the phone. Be nice to him because he also knows where the hang-up button is. That's Gil. He's a great guy and a great producer and engineer. Okay, you're sitting at home and you're wondering if you could call in. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. You can get in, you'll get one of the lines, and I'll get to you just as quickly as I can. Usually you're going to be on hold for 2 or 3 minutes. That's about it. 602-508-0960. We had a caller from Prescott call and said, how do I find a good shop in Prescott, or do you have one you can recommend? I wish I did, but I don't. But I'll tell you how to find one. If you're in a small community like that, you need to walk around or drive around and stop at the auto parts store, 3 or 4 of them. Kind of wander around and hope that one of the counter people say, can I help you? And then you can say to them, I usually say to wave them over to an aisle. You know, you're looking at the electrical bulbs and somebody says, can we help you? Yeah. And then you just kind of say, come here for a minute. Then you say to them, I want to know the shop. I'm new to the area and I want to know the shop that buys parts from you and doesn't return them, because they tried them on the car and it didn't fix the car, so they're using new parts to diagnose the car. I want somebody who pays their bills, and I want somebody who the boss and everybody likes because they're a good guy and because they're not ripping anybody off, and they're not, and see, auto parts stores hate shops that order an alternator and then they put it, they get it back in the box. The box has been opened, the box is greasy, got dirty handprints all over it, and the alternator's obviously been installed. Those are the kinds of shop you don't want to deal with. He doesn't have the ability to find out if the alternator's bad. Holy mackerel. So in Prescott, stop at 3 or 4 different auto parts stores. Just tell them, I'm new to the area. And then say, who do you do business with? Who does your mother and father do business with? You're going to find the gray-haired, greasy guys that have been in Prescott a very long time. And then you're going to go to Google, and you're going to go to Google.com, and then you're just going to write down the shop name and look at their reviews. And you're looking for a shop that has a 4 or 5 star average. You're not looking for a star with a 2.5 average. I think everybody pretty much knows a 2.5 is nothing to be proud of. So those are the kinds of things that you have. All of us are going to have blazing bad reviews. Even my shop does. Somebody gets mad at me and then they just embellish the heck out of it. And all it was we scratched their windshield because the wipers that we installed fell apart. And it's one of those things. And so we put a windshield in it, but we're going to pay for the rest of our life because we scratched the windshield, which they don't have anymore, and we already put one in it. So those are the kinds of things that happen, but just that's easiest enough. The gray-haired guys in the auto parts facilities, they're the ones that know who the good guys are that can fix cars without, you know, swapping parts. All righty, we're going to talk about Tom Blackwell. Tom Blackwell and I have been friends for a long time. I'll tell you what I did just the other day. I was up in North Phoenix. He's on 40th and Greenway, just north of Greenway on 40th Street on the west side of the road behind the Circle K there. And he wasn't there. So with the permission of someone in the front office, and I can't possibly, you know, tell you who it is, because you'll know in a minute, as I went up and messed up his desk. I dumped all this stuff in his trash can on his desk, and I just did a bunch of other stuff. And then I took some toilet paper, and he predominantly, in his little pen and pencil holder, he had a brown magic marker. So I just doctored up the toilet paper with a little brown magic marker and left it on there, and then I put my business card next to it. I wasn't even a block away when he called me and used some of the worst words I've ever heard in all my life. But he's a good guy and he knows how to fix cars. So if you're at 40th and Greenway, Tom is a good guy, and he does lots of vintage work, but right now he's backed up by 6 months. So if you have an old car and you want to talk about vintage stuff, you can go talk to Tom. But I'm going to tell you right now he's booked months and months out on vintage car stuff. But if you have a car and you live in the geographical area and you want the oil changed, he can handle that as well. So that's Blackwell Automotive at 40th Street and Greenway. When you talk about a relationship, I'll tell you what kind of customers I like. I like customers who just give me the symptoms. What is it that your car's doing? I like customers even better when they bring it to me as if they sent me an email. This is what my 2018 Chevy pickup does in the mornings when I don't like it. and here's my cell phone number, and here's my email address, and they hand that piece of paper to the service writer to be attached to the work order. Something like that just really plays big benefits when somebody who knows the issue is the one that wrote it down. That's really beneficial. And then you always say to the shop, I want my old parts back. You always say that to the shop. They're not going to take a big old greasy starter and put it on the passenger side floorboard of your car. They're going to put the starter back in the box. They're going to wrap it up with paper. They're going to put the box, and they're going to say to you, when you're done with that, I charged you $20 on the core charge because that's how much I have to pay because you want your starter. But if you bring it back, I'll give you your $20 back. I know your husband probably wants to look at it, or your son or something like that. That's okay. All of us know that. But there is a core charge on a lot of hard parts. Now, there's no core charges on fan belts and hoses and stuff, but you should also ask for those. Why? Pretty simple. If you travel outside the metropolitan area, it's nice to have the upper and lower and a couple of heater hoses and a couple of fan belts that are hidden in the corner of your trunk. Because when you break down on Sunday morning in Wilcox, Arizona, you're going to be able to find somebody that can change the hose, but you're not going to find an auto parts store that's going to be open. But you've got hoses and belts in your trunk. We do that all the time, and we copied it from another shop that we thought was the greatest thing since sliced cheese. Give them their old parts back. Put them in the trunk. But we have to tell you we put them in the trunk, because when we first started doing this, the lady came back and said, I'm not your trash can, and threw her hoses and belts at us. And we couldn't catch her to tell her. We did that with a good heart. It wasn't we're using your car as a trash can. Those are emergency stuff. So anyway, we learned, and now we tell everybody that we put your old parts in a bag, a plastic bag, and we put them by the spare tire. And so if you need them and you don't have, the auto parts stores aren't open, then you have hoses and belts, and those are the kinds of things that get you going. Okay, we have a caller, 602-508-0960. There's four lines open, 602-508-0960. And who's the caller, Gil?
The caller's Vince.
Vince, good morning.
How are you, Mark?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
I have a 1984 Datsun or Nissan 300.
Okay.
And when I started, it runs for about 30 seconds and then stalls. I could just turn around and start it again, and it will run for another 30 seconds and then stalls. I changed the fuel line filter, but that's as far as I wanted to go, and that didn't do any good.
Okay.
Any suggestions on a shop that I could go to in the area? See, the guy that I had that normally worked on the car for years and years, he first advertised as a Datsun repair, independent Datsun shop, and he passed away a little while ago, and his daughter sold the shop. So I'm looking for an old guy like you and I.
Okay. What part of town are you in?
I'm in the Northeast Phoenix.
Okay. Northeast, go to MarkSalem.com. Mark Salem, Salem like the cigarette. And then just click on best car repair shops. Let me explain something. This is really easy, and I'll tell you why. It sounds like a fuel delivery problem. And if that's the case, then the question is we would take the filter out. Now, when you took the filter out, did you replace it?
Yes.
Okay. Did you blow through it? Well, you had the old filter in your left hand, and you had the new filter in your right hand. Did you ask your wife to blow through this filter and then blow through that filter and tell me if there's a difference? Did you do that?
No. No,
okay, we always do that. It's no big deal. You can put your mouth around it. You know, you don't end up with gasoline in your mouth or anything. But
Yeah. If
you take the old filter off and you blow through it, and it's like somebody, you're blowing through a trumpet where somebody stuck an orange in the trumpet where you can't blow, then you go, boom, that's the problem. But if you blow through it and it goes through like a straw, then you know the filter's not plugged up. In your particular case, we have a problem with spark or fuel. So we can have fuel that we're just running the bowl on the carburetor out, because I think you have a carbureted engine on that 84 Datsun. And so one of the things that I would do if I was the technician working on that is I'd get a bottle of propane, and we have a hose and a nozzle, and I would say to John, start it up, and I would listen, and I would hear it humming along, and then all of a sudden I'd hear da 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 da, and then I'd just put the hose with propane over the top of the carburetor. And it would go, and I go, okay, if the carburetor's out of gas, what's the matter with it? So then I would take a hammer and I'd gently tap around the carburetor, and while it's running and I'm feeding it propane, and I know it runs and I know it's got propane as fuel, but I need fuel in the carb. And so if I tap it, then all of a sudden I take the propane away and it starts running. Well, I just knocked the needle and seat, I just resituated the needle and seat on the float. And so that's kind of what we're looking at. And during that period of time, as we artificially inseminate the motor with fuel, carb spray, propane, anything, we're also looking at the ignition system. And if the ignition system is part of the problem, then we'll lose spark. And if that's the case, we have to go in that direction first. We need spark before we need fuel. But in your particular case, I'm thinking I agree with you. The initial guess is that we have a fuel starvation problem. And more than likely, it's going to be related to the carburetor. Now, the carburetor's parked with the bowl full. But let's say that we've got these little lead plugs on the bottom of the bowl of the carburetor. Well, those leak. And so overnight it leaks, and then the next morning it starts and runs for 30 seconds and shuts off. Then you crank the hell out of it forever and ever, and then all finally it'll start and run and be okay. Well, that's a fuel starvation problem, and typically it's on the carburetor, and us old guys know how to fix that. So I would send you to Blackwell, but I know he's just booked beyond belief, but it wouldn't hurt to call him. He's up at 40th and Greenway. And you could say, can you get this Nissan in? Salem says you probably can't fix it anyway, but I'd like to bring it in. And Salem said to call him, and he'll help you fix it. But I mean, on a 1 to 10 scale, for us master technicians, this is a 2. Mm-hmm. Really a 2.
It's a 2.
Yeah.
Okay, sounds good. Yeah, I'll give him a call.
Okay.
I'll do what you said, and then I'm sure that I've tried a couple of times with this car, and it just doesn't work. And I'm afraid to bring it into a shop with all these new guys, young kids, 20 years old, and they don't when they see Datsun on the car, they don't even know what it is.
No, you're right.
It's a neat. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you're right. There's some scare. We have young technicians that work for us, and what we do is we hire around our technician strengths. For instance, I've got Eddie works for me for 33 years. Well, I'll just tell you real quick. Eddie, 33, Andy, 28, Alan, 25, Jeff, 23, Adam, 21, Ron, 8, Sean, 8, Daniel, 5.
Perfect.
These are how long these people have worked for me. And the top five guys on this, on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 2 and maybe a 3. And they also know that if we have a little trash in the needle and seat, then they take the top of the carburetor off. Oh, there's the trash. They clean it all out. They replace the fuel filter, put it all back together. They don't rebuild the carburetor, and they say, you're done. Or they say, no, I have to rebuild the carburetor because there's all kinds of trash in it. So those are the kinds of guys you're looking for. Blackwell's got those guys.
That's right. Okay. Very good. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. You're welcome. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. I think the lines are wide open. Gil, do we have 5 open lines right now?
Actually, we have a couple of...
Okay. We have a couple of callers, but that means we have probably 3 lines available. 602-508-0960, and I'm going to take a break and be right back. Well, when it comes to diesels, there's a couple of shops in town, but strictly diesel service and repair up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He really doesn't have another shop that is capable as Nate is with Chevy, Ford, and Dodge diesels. Nate knows from the basics, fundamentals, all the way up to the Rapid Roy, the race car boy kind of motors. He can do all of that kind of stuff for you. But when it just comes to normal maintenance and figure out why it doesn't start or why it blows black smoke or blue smoke or white smoke, Nate's good for that. So no matter where you're at, service, repair, parts, foreign and domestic like diesels, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, that's strictly diesel service and repair. He's open Monday through Friday, and they sell parts 24 hours a day on their website. And like many of us, they have parts that are tried and true, and they do what they say they're going to do. We're not going to put up a part that we just bought for the first time yesterday. After about 6 months of using and selling the heck out of that part, then we put it on the website. So anyway, and I'm not part of his website, but strictly diesel service and repair. Matt, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Yeah, hi. I've got a 07 Chevy 2500 truck that's got 240,000 miles on it, and my transmission I've had refilled 4 years ago. Long story, basically it's not going in reverse. So it's driving with the trailer and backing up a steep hill, and something happened, and it just doesn't go in reverse anymore.
Okay. I'd probably call Automatic Transmission Exchange. They're going to be able to tell you what transmission you have in your truck, because you're going to tell them it's an 07 3/4 ton. The 240,000 mile kind of concerns me, because if you started the conversation with how long do you think this transmission is going to last, I would say if you take good care of it, 100 to 125,000 miles, and you're well past that. This could be the second one, and if that's the case, then let's just average it out. It was 120 on the first one and 120 on the second one. If you're going to do an exchange and this ends up to be something that needs a complete unit, then there's lots of shops out there that buy units and install them. We flush the coolers, we flush the lines, the old one comes out, the new one goes in, we reprogram it, we go drive it, we do all that kind of stuff. And everything we do is done by VIN number. So we make sure that the transmission we buy fits your VIN number. And if that's the case, then just about any shop, mechanical shop on my list at marksalem.com does transmissions. What part of town specifically are you in?
I'm on Scottsdale, 101 in Cactus, northeast Scottsdale, kind of.
Okay. I know that Combs Automotive is not on my shop. He's up at Pinnacle Peak in Scottsdale Road. Combs Automotive, C-O-M-B-S, but Mark and I have been friends since the 1970s. So we've been good friends, and I know he's capable of doing that. Another guy that's on my list is Bridwell Automotive. He's at Scottsdale and Lincoln. So both of those guys would be... Combs or Scottsdale, Bridwell Automotive. Both of those guys could probably replace the transmission. I would caution you, if this is the original transmission, going in and fixing this is probably not going to be in your best interest.
I had the transmission rebuilt about like maybe 20 or 30,000 miles ago, but about 4 years ago. It's my work truck. It's a second truck. I don't drive it much, but usually when I do, it's to tow a trailer or a boat or just drive around the yard for a mobile toolbox.
Okay.
Kind of what it is.
All right. If you're going to fix the 20 to 30,000 mile transmission, then you go to automatic transmission exchange. Call them, make an appointment, and drop it off. He can fix that. He's the guy that has all the technical ability inside. The rest of us guys are just what we call R&R, remove and reinstall. I was assuming it was 240 years old. I'm thinking it's better just to replace the transmission than just try to go fix the reverse.
Yeah.
But now I've changed my mind. I'm going to send you back to automatic transmission exchange. Okay?
Okay. And he's in Mesa?
No, I'm sorry. He's on Washington and 40th Street downtown.
Okay. I'll call him.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
You betcha. Steve, good morning. Can I help you?
Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking.
2014 Toyota Tundra. OEM shocks. These are struts, I guess, rather than traditional shock absorbers.
Uh-huh.
What I've got is... a little bit of oil seeping from the top of one of those units. And I'm not showing any abnormal tire wear or abnormal handling or braking at this point, but I'm thinking, you know, as an OEM unit, they're probably needing to be replaced, and I'm thinking it's probably better to replace both of them rather than just one.
Most of us are going to twist your arm on that one. We want you to do both at the same time. Because if it's a front strut, we're going to have to align it after we're done. And we don't want to have the problem where, God forbid, we give you this back after we replace the passenger side strut, and then all of a sudden we've got all this abnormal wear on the driver's side front tire. That's just ugly. So, yes, I agree. You do both.
That was my inclination. My local shop up in Payson noticed this when I had my oil change back in the spring. They said, it's not terrible. It's something you want to keep an eye on. But, you know, I figured they're going to get to do it maybe this fall or maybe during the winter sometime, and I just wanted to make sure that I had enough money saved up to do both of them, you know?
Yeah, and I want you to listen carefully on how I word this, okay? Listen carefully.
Yeah.
It's a great idea when you're done to get a specific estimate. The two shocks are this. R&R, remove and reinstall, is this. Shop supplies, environmental charges, sales tax. So it's going to be between this and this. We all do that bracketing. Then you're going to call a couple of other shops and just say to them, my name is Steve, and I have a 14 Tundra, and I'd like you to call me back with a number, or here's my email address, and just tell me, two shocks, approximately, labor, approximately? Do you have to line it? Yes. You know, shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax. Just give me some kind of a ballpark figure, and I'll appreciate that. Thank you very much. That's what I think you should do.
All right. That sounds like good advice. I'm not living in Tempe anymore, just down the street from your shop, so I gotta find a good one up in Payson, you know?
Well, did you read between the lines of what I said to you?
2 minutes.
I've been listening to this show a long time, you know?
I have been up here since 2011, and I am amazed at some of this shit I hear up here. I just am amazed, and
Did you guys ever consider
we're going to go to the next caller. Thank you very much for that. No, I'm not moving to Payson. I came up here to play with my horses and cows. I didn't come up here to work. I really, that's good advice. Is just let's spread that out a little bit and let's just see what the difference is. And you're going to give them the parts, the labor, the shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax. That's what you're going to give them. So, all right, we're going to move on. Scott, I'm going to start your question, but I'm going to take a break. But give me your question and go ahead, sir.
I'm a guy that all my work, but I now they have say my transfer case has an output shaft leak. Okay. Leak at transfer case output shaft. Who can I get to do that beside a $2,800 dealer?
Well, the real question is you got to take the rear drive shaft out of it, and you got to wiggle the snout coming out. And if the snout wiggles up and down 4 miles north and 4 miles south, then we're going to have to take the tail shaft off and replace the bushing, and we're going to have to do a bunch of work inside. On the other hand, if there is no snout movement, and all we've got is a seal that's gone bad, and when we take the seal out, then we find that the garter spring has come out of the seal, then you just put a spring back in, and you explain to your customer, that's what I'm going to do. So you stay there because I want to talk to you some more, and I'm only 12 seconds away from when Gil's going to start using bad words in my ear, and he's going to call me all kinds of names because I don't get out at exactly 30 minutes after the hour, which is 3 seconds from now. So, goodbye. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and we're going to do something that we should have done and then talk about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Folks, Thompson's is the only shop in Mesa that I can recommend. I've known the family since the 60s and the 70s, so I know that both Brian and Thelma know the difference between right and wrong. Just recently, they had a bad storm in downtown Mesa. They're on Main Street east of Stapley, and they blew the roof off their shop. If you're a customer of his, please remain a customer of Brian and Thelma's while they put their shop back together. For those of you in Mesa that are looking for a good shop, I know of no better shop than Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street in Mesa, just east of Stapley. And it would be nice if you did patronize them, you would then know that why Mark Salem loves the Thompson family and loves Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Scott, on your T-case with your output, I'm not real familiar with the specific, but sometimes we have an O-ring on the splined external shaft of the transfer case, and that O-ring keeps oil from running down through the splines and leaking at the back of the front joint. That's why we need somebody that knows the difference. That's why we need somebody to be able to do it. But I'll bet you this. I'll bet you an oil change on your truck that whoever does fix it, then you have to wait for, you know, a month after it's done to make sure that there is no leaking. Whoever fixes it is going to fix it for half as much as the bid you've already got.
Really?
Yeah. How many miles are on the truck?
75.
Boy. You'll figure it out. You'll figure it out. Just you're going to go in there and say, I got a drip right here. I want you to do what you got to do. Do you have to take it apart to look at it? And if you do, how much does that cost? What's this diagnosis going to cost me? And I need an estimate. And I need you to hang your hat on the estimate to where I'm not going to come back in a week later or any. What part of town do you live in?
Desert Ridge.
Okay. I'd go to Harker's. Your chances of success just went to 100%. 38th Avenue and Indian School.
Where's that?
38th Avenue and Indian School, Harker's. And how about downtown area? Is there any other geographical area that you patronize a lot?
No, just over by I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. Okay. I go over there a bit.
Okay, well, Kurtz is...
Or Scottsdale.
Yeah, I-17 and Bell is Kurtz. He's on the northeast corner of I-17 and Bell. Either one of those two guys could... this on a 1 to 10 scale, this is a 5 or a 6. On the diagnostic side, the repair's easy, but you damn well get the right oil leak. You better get the right oil leak or you're going to be doing it again. So that's the real issue, is make sure you don't do it again. But at 75,000 miles, 1,500, I'll tell you what the 1,500 is. We're going to take the drive shaft out. We're going to pull the tail shaft off. We're going to replace the rear tail shaft and probably the bushing in the cover. We're going to put the cover back on. We're going to put a new seal. We're probably going to put a front joint on it. Then we're going to put it all back together, which is something that you would normally do in the 250 to 300,000 mile range with an oil leak at the back of the transfer case. So you said 75, okay. And unless I missed the 175 or 275, then I'm going to send you to somebody. And I would really appreciate it, Mark, at MarkSalem.com, Mark with a K, at MarkSalem, like the cigarette.com. Tell me at the end how we did, because that makes great radio fodder. You know, at the end of the day, here we have an estimate from here, and we're just going to say an estimate from another shop. And then here we have the fix, and the guy's got 30 days on it, not a drop come out of it. We know it's fixed, and here's the information. This is who fixed it, and this is what my bill was. So I'd like to see that.
All right. Now, I would think the way they wrote it up that they already took it apart and looked and came up with this as the diagnosis, but I've got to ask them.
2 minutes.
Well, that's a good point, because if it's written up, then, and if they took it apart, there's going to have to be some gaskets and some oil put back in it. So look at your bill for the four line items of gaskets and oil and see what happens. It's possible. Normally we don't do that without permission, and I'm not going to take the tail shaft off the transfer case if you're not going to let me fix it. To go in there and tell you it needs all this work and to put it back together I don't want to do that. I want to fix it.
Makes sense.
All righty. Well,
I'll let you know, Mark. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I'm going to put TOT Kurtz Harkers and all the places we talked about. Jeff, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning. How you doing?
I'm good. Thank you very much.
I have a 2003 Thor Winsport with the GMC Workhorse engine,
okay,
and Allison transmission. And what I'm having, when we take it out to go up towards Payson, up in that area when we go, and doing the hill, it always runs a little warmer, and that's another thing. But I'm having points coming back over the hills where it's like it's starving for gas, and it almost quits running. And I did change the fuel filter, and I thought that took care of it, but it did it again the last time we had it out.
Okay. So this is a GMC, and it's got a diesel motor with the Allison transmission, right?
No, it's the Workhorse engine. That's the 4 GMC. It's the 490.
Okay. It's the 6-liter. It's the 6-liter gas, I think, is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay. So as far as it running hot, I want you to define hot in a minute, because I got to take a break. And when I come back, well, I'm going to ask you two questions. Number one, I want to know where it's at on the gauge. I want you to describe the gauge to me. And number two, then we're going to ask that when you get to the top of the hill and you start down the other side, does it cool off immediately? Those are the two questions, and we'll be right back. Let's queue up Jeff. And Jeff, I had to take a break, but on your Allison transmission, you were going to tell me what you had been told by another shop.
Well, what I had, we were talking about, I'm having a problem with it acting like it's starving for fuel.
Okay.
But I've also had the problem going up towards Payson that I get attempted. Maybe 190 to 230 degrees.
On the engine or on the transmission?
On the engine.
Oh, I'm not worried about that at all. I don't want you to worry about it. And let me just explain. Water boils at 212, but when we add coolant to it, it moves the boiling point up to 260, 270, 280. Okay? You're in really big trouble at the red zone of your gauge, which is typically 250, 260. So you don't want to get into the red zone. But you expect that when you've got all the beer in the back of the truck and you've got all your drunk buddies in the back of the truck and you're going up to Payson, you're going to, when you pull the three hills on the way to Payson, you're going to move that gauge. That gauge, I want you to pretend like from the red to the left is okay as long as what you're seeing out your windshield matches the gauge. So when you go down the hill, woof, that needle should drop down. And when you go up the hill, it goes up. Don't worry. Don't spend no money on that. Don't.
Okay. The other thing is with it, after a while, it won't, if after the trip gets going, it'll start going up a hill, and it's like it's starving for gas.
Okay.
And I changed the fuel filter, but I'm wondering if it could be the fuel pump.
Yes, it could. It could be the fuel pump. It's gas. It's only going to have one filter. So we could also have a fuel pressure regulator bad. The fuel pressure regulator is to close the gates to build pressure, and if the fuel regulator goes bad or it gets out of spec, then instead of maintaining 60 pounds of pressure, it maintains 40 pounds of pressure or 30 pounds of pressure. This isn't that big of a deal. The other thing, too, is you wouldn't be the first truck, and I don't know every car, you know, perfectly, but I'm just wondering how many filters this has got on it. And it's I can tell you, my shop has been embarrassed numerous times because we didn't look for a second filter, and it was a second filter that had the problem. Sometimes there's two in a line. So that's something.
Now, I do.
Go ahead.
Okay. I do have a Schrader valve on there. Would it do any good to screw a pressure gauge on there that I could watch while it was doing it when I'm going on the hill?
Yes.
It won't act up until I'm... Okay.
Yeah.
I'll do that.
And here's
find out exactly what the pressure is.
Okay. You're going to be in the 40 to 60 pounds range. I'm pretty sure that's what you're going to find on the internet when you look for fuel pressure, regulated fuel pressure. But you can rent those at auto parts store, and you're going to hook it to the Schrader valve.
Okay.
Then you're going to bring it around underneath through the windshield wipers, and then you're going to tape the gauge to the windshield.
Yep.
I want everything in the gauge outside. Wait a minute. I want everything with the gauge outside the cab. I don't want any portion of the hose or the gauge in the cab. See, in case we spring a gas leak, I don't want the you guys to be covered in gas. So on the outside of the windshield is where your gauge is going to be, okay?
Correct.
Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right. You're welcome. Dan, you're up next. How can I help you?
I had a catalytic converter replacement because it was stolen. And I asked you a question about this, a month or so ago. But the check engine light has been on ever since. I've done some reading, and it seems that there's a California spec converter and a non-California spec converter. And I have a California spec car. How different are the converters? And if I have a California spec car, will the cheaper non-California converter not extinguish the light?
Well, it depends on who you ask, but if you ask about 20 of my cowboy buddies that work on cars, we're going to tell you there is no difference. But I'm going to tell you it's more likely than not that you just simply have a problem the computer's picking up that has nothing to do whether this is a California cat or whether it's a 48-state cat. So really what needs to happen is somebody needs to pull the code, then somebody needs to go through the serial stream data and interface the computer and say, what the hell are you seeing? And the computer saying, I'm not seeing any heat coming out of that back sensor. Oh, well, why not? Well, I don't know. Okay, so then you go back there and you look and you gun the sensor and the sensor's getting good and hot. And then you go, oh, there's no wire connected to it. Or look at here, the wire's frayed and it's hitting the housing. Or this or that. So this isn't that big of a deal. Who put the cat in?
Well, unfortunately, my daughter had it, the car in Denver, and it was a place in Denver that did it.
Okay.
And so it's now in Phoenix, and here I am with a light.
Okay, and really and truly, that's the reason why the check engine light is yellow. It means caution. It doesn't mean stop. And so you're okay. It's just that we have to – here's the deal. In the front of the catalytic – we talk voltage language all the time. I want you to remember this, okay? One is low and five is high, okay? One is low and five is high. Well, we have an oxygen sensor at the front of the cat and the back of the cat. The one in the front, hypothetically, we want it to scream five all the time. I see a lot of fuel. I see a lot of fuel. That's a five. The one in the back, after this fuel-laden – exhaust goes through the catalytic converter. We're supposed to consume the fuel. So what is the number the computer should see on the backside of the cat? One. That's it. We see five going in and one coming out. And so we need to make sure that those two O2 sensors are talking to one another, and not only talking to one another, but talking forward, and that they're giving us a good reading. Is the catalytic converter lighting? Well, if the cat doesn't light and it doesn't get hot, and we use temperature guns for that, then the cat's not lighting, and it's because it's incapable of lighting itself. So we need another cat. So it could be a O2 sensor on the front, it could be an O2 sensor on the back, or it could be the cat itself. But to be perfectly honest with you, it's more likely that somebody bungled the O2 sensors, they didn't plug them in, or the wires are cut, or the O2 sensor is defective. This isn't a tough thing to do. Do you have a shop that you like?
Well, actually, I went to that VVRP thing. Uh-huh. I had it license renewal, and so I failed the test.
Okay.
And I'm taking it to Blackwell on Tuesday.
Oh God Almighty! I'm sorry that you pick Blackwell, or did somebody else pick Blackwell for you?
Well, you said Blackwell was a good shop.
I'm teasing you. I want you to say, Mark said you picked Blackwell. How much did you drink that day? I just, you know, no, he's the guy for it. I mean, this isn't a big deal. I'm going to go drive the car. I'm going to put it on a rack. I'm going to take my temperature gun. I'm going to take a temperature of the front of the cat and the back of the cat. And then I'm going to plug in my scanner, and I'm going to look at those two O2 sensors. And then I'm going to rev the motor, ta-da. And I'm going to run that front catalytic converter, and I want to see five. And on the back side, I want to see one. But if I see five on the front and five on the back, the cat's no good. I make it sound easy. What I just described is a 30-minute operation. So he'll do fine.
Oh, it sounds not like it's not quick. I can see that.
Yeah. So I you're at a good place. I said at the beginning of the show that Blackwell's booked for months and months and months, but what he has is his vintage car stuff is booked months and months and months. And I just stopped by. I was attending a funeral across the street from his shop the other day, and I stopped by and I went and messed up his desk. But he's on the what we call the public side of our shops, where we're not doing specialty diesel. Like for us, we do diesel performance and diesel modifications and lifts and lowers and all that stuff. But Blackwell's the same way. He has a vintage car side, and then he has the public car side, and you're on the public car side. He's a good guy, and he'll fix it right. But just, you can say to what the heck is his name? Aaron. Aaron is the guy that you're going to talk to, and you can say to him with a straight face, I love Aaron. He's a great guy. I wish he worked for me. You can say to Aaron, by the way, Mark Salem said that if you have a tough time diagnosing this, to give him a call and he'll stop by. Aaron will laugh his butt off. He'll know that you and I have talked, that's for sure. Okay?
Okay. All right, thanks.
You betcha. As you can tell, the shops that I talk about and refer you to are friends of mine. I have their phone numbers. They have my phone numbers. We know secrets about one another. We probably have drank too much together at one time or another over the last 20 years. But it's really important for you to understand that there's lots of shops out there. We have chain stores, we have independents, and we have dealers. But now we also have we've got conglomerates where people are coming in and buying four or five shops altogether. You'll remember not too long ago, somebody bought all 28 stores of Sun Devil Auto. So if you had a favorite manager at a Sun Devil, hopefully he's still there. He may not be. But one new company had just bought all of the Sun Devils, and there's been some significant changes for the good and for the bad, like there always is. Prices go up. You can't afford to pay, and I'm being facetious here, $10,000 a square foot and not have the prices go up as a result of that. And I'm just being facetious. It's just a stupid example. But the idea is that that's really what's going on right now. There's a whole lot of it. A shop down the street from us, 2 miles south of us, Greg owned it. He just sold it for millions and millions of dollars. And the first thing they did is raise their prices. But right now in the mechanical field, your $150 to $200 is now the new norm. There's very few shops that are going to be less than $150, other than the quick lube facilities and the tire stores and those specialty shops that don't have the heavy diagnosis. They're going to do heavy diagnosis, and the diagnosis, it's getting easier every year, slightly easier, because the equipment that we purchase makes it easier to diagnose it. The equipment is smart and tells us more. Do this next, and it also guides us. But many of us old guys, we just don't want to look at the numbers, and we can figure it out. So if I've got an O2 sensor that's bad, I can try to make it say left, and I can try to make it say right. If I can make it say left, it's good. If I can make it say right, it's good. Then the problem is that the message is wrong, but the signal's not. So then I have to go in front of the catalytic converter and find out what's going on underneath the hood that's making the catalytic converter squawk. And that's how it works. So my email address is mark@marksalem.com. And if you want me to call you, I'm going to call you from a blocked number. So if you can ask me a question, but if you'll give me a phone number, I'm going to call you from a number that's not going to give my cell phone out, because I can't afford to have hundreds of calls a day from people with car problems. But you can do that, mark@marksalem.com. There's lots of other ways that you can get information. Certainly you can get on Google. Certainly you can, but just stick with your specific car, the year, make, and model, and the engine and the transmission combination. Stick with that. Try not to just blow in there a 2012 Chevy C10 and then just go for everything, because that window's too wide and you're going to get confused. By the same token, when you take your car in, we like it, and we think you are better served by writing down what you want to tell us and then just read the note and hand it to us. That way you're prepared. If there's a dispute and the shop tells the dispute resolution facility, she never said that, you say, no, I handed you this piece of paper, and it clearly says that on there. So that written communication between you and the shop. But what's nice, too, is you tell the service writer. The service writer hands the work order to the shop foreman. The shop foreman hands it to the technician. And you're wrong when you think that what you said to the shop or to the service writer at the front counter or in the driveway is going to get to the technician in the right order. You know that that's not going to happen. So if you write it down, and even better yet, many of my customers, they'll have one piece of paper hanging from the rearview mirror, and the identical sister to that piece of paper they've handled to the service writer. So the service writer has one, and hopefully he'll put it in the car. But if he doesn't and he keeps it, then there is one in the car. And, of course, that makes our job so much easier. And then if you give us a name and a phone number, any questions, call this name and phone number. We want to talk to the wife if it's her car. We want to talk to her unless she's real shy. And if the husband wants to step in front of the wife, that's okay with us. But it's the same way. We want to talk to the person with the car. So if the college student brings the car in and mom wants us to deal with her, can we just talk to the college student and ask them questions first? Is that okay? We're not going to ask them to okay an estimate. We'll ask you to do that. But we just have some questions with respect to, does this always happen when the fuel tank's full? That's a good answer, especially if we have an evaporative code. So if we have a code that involves the evaporative system, and the evaporative system is this, we're going to suck the fumes off the gas tank and burn them again. That's what it's all about. We have infrastructure where we're going to suck the fumes, not liquid, but the fumes, the gas fumes out of the gas tank, send them forward, and send them through the motor. That's the evaporative system. So that, along with everything else, is part and parcel of our diagnosis. And so that's kind of what we want you to help us do. We're not real interested what the guy at the auto parts store said, that the little three-whiskered kid that looked at the code and pronounced it that it needed a catalytic converter, because 95 times out of 100, they're wrong. Because the catalytic converter, it's got trash coming in, and it's supposed to have clean air going out. And the problem is that if there's trash coming in, the catalytic converter is not the problem. It's the motor that's the problem. You've got an injector leaking gasoline. You've got a plugged-up air filter. You've got a bad fuel pressure regulator. The diaphragm's blown out. You're sucking liquid fuel into the vacuum system. So up front of the catalytic converter, we got a big problem that's causing the catalytic converter codes. But the codes don't say the cat's bad. The codes just tell us what we need to see here. It's that easy. We'll be back next week.